Fall has arrived, and that means there are a few things to do to check around your garden and make sure things are going well. And today our guest is going to talk about some of those things and give you some advice. And we can talk about anything, I think, from fall cleanup to bulbs to lawn aeration, for that matter, if you want to discuss it with Lisa Johnson. Lisa is the horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. And she's always happy to answer your gardening questions. When you call in, for example, call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post a photo, if you want a gardening photo, or maybe a plant identification photo, on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. And Lisa Johnson, welcome back.
Thanks much. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you back. You know, I kind of talked about flower bulbs to begin the show, and they're kind of a good investment in so many ways because they come back. They multiply a little.
Some of them do anyway.
Yeah, some of them do anyway. Yeah, that's right. But sometimes over time, and I've got some bulbs out there that I'm probably going to have to, I should have divided already probably. But I haven't done it yet. And I'm wondering, what about that whole process?
Sure. Well, usually when we start to notice that the bulbs are not flowering well, that is the time that it's a good time to check on whether or not they've been divided. So if you have a clump that kind of starts to die out in the middle or it's just not flowering very well, that's when you want to do your division. And you can do that in the fall anytime from early September through the end of October should be fine to do that. And I usually recommend that when you do your division that you water them back in afterwards and that you put a marker out so you can remember where you put the darn things.
Where the heck they are. Yeah, for sure. Do you, so is it, so you'd be a little careful, obviously, if you dig up, you don't want to nail them, I suppose.
Yeah, that's hard to avoid doing, unfortunately.
You're going to do some of that.
You're going to do some of that. It's just kind of the way things go. Usually, the bulbs that last the longest in the garden around here tend to be the daffodils and to some extent the ornamental onions. Mm-hmm. Tulips, not usually, unless they're species tulips.
Okay.
The hybrid tulips just don't hang around very long here. In fact, some people treat them as annuals.
Yeah.
And figure that they probably won't come back next year.
I don't have a single tulip.
No, I love them, but
yeah, they're pretty.
But it is disappointing when they don't come back. The problem is that tulips come from, well, as well as do daffodils, from the Middle East. So they come from Iran and Pakistan and Afghanistan, et cetera, where it gets pretty darn hot and dry during the summer months. And also, it has pretty darn good drainage in most parts.
Mm.
And then you bring them to the Midwest with our heavy clay soil, and we plant annuals next to them and water and fertilize them copiously, and of course, they rot. So one of my best pieces of advice is, you know, don't plant annuals or perennials that need a lot of water next to your tulips. The daffodils can handle it a little bit better, but not so much the hybrid tulips. Species tulips, the smaller dwarf tulips, the grigiais, the now I'm forgetting all the other names, but the tardas,
mm-hmm.
Tardifloras, all of those tend to live a bit longer.
But still an issue. What about peonies?
Now, peonies are not true bulbs, of course. They're roots. But this is the time of year to divide them. And I usually tell people to try and have it done by the end of, about now.
Mm-hmm.
because we never know what Mother Nature's going to throw at us
sure.
in October. But when you do dig them up, you look for these little dark pink eyes. That's what they're called. They're actually buds, and that's where the stems and flowers are going to come from for next year. And you want to make sure you don't replant your peony roots too deeply, because then they don't flower very well. So you want to make sure those buds are about an inch and a half, no deeper than that.
That's not very deep. So.
No, it isn't very deep, especially if you use mulch and so on. And usually when you do divide them, it's going to set them back for a couple years, so you probably won't see blooms for a couple years.
Yeah, so you're not going to be doing that every year.
No. In fact, you want to avoid dividing them as much as possible.
We have Bob and Eau Claire with a question, so let's go there. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call, and good morning to you both.
Morning.
We're having a beautiful fall day in western Wisconsin, very unseasonably warm. And obviously that means that we keep cutting the grass.
Mm-hmm.
It's going along quite nicely. I have gotten a couple of flyers from a couple of other, I won't name any names, but let's say that they are people who should know what they're talking about where lawns are concerned. And in both of them, they talk about cutting the grass shorter as you go into the winter to prevent buildup of mold and mm-hmm. Die back of the grass.
Mm-hmm.
And yet every person that I have heard come through on Garden Talk has always advocated for keeping the grass between 3 and 4 inches high. And so do we continue to do that as we approach winter and we're getting close to the last cutting of the year? Do we still try to maintain that 3 to 4 inch, or do we go a little shallower going mm-hmm. into the winter?
Well, the short answer is yes, you do go a little shorter on the last mowing of the season. Now, I know it's hard to determine, in fact, which is going to be the last mowing of the season, but usually you can figure it's going to be somewhere between mid-October and the end of October. And then you do go shorter, about, you know, two inches. I wouldn't want to make it much shorter than that, but definitely shorter than the 3 to 4 inch that we recommend during the growing season. And it is to prevent, if we have heavy snows, sometimes we get snow mold, and all of that extra foliage can cause some issues with little voles.
Yeah, so I was going to say voles.
Yeah, vole damage over the winter, and if it's shorter, it tends to be less of a food source for them.
But Bob, I can tell you for sure that I have often said, make that last cut a short one.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, okay. 3 to 4 inches, yep. That's the way to go.
Thank you so much.
All
You're
right.
welcome.
Thanks,
Bye.
Bob. Have a good lawn. Thanks very much for calling. We have, let's see, Kel in Sugar Camp up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for your timely show. I take care of my parents' property, and when they moved in 6 years ago, they had three very tiny spruce trees that had been not taken care of. Okay, they were really dwarfed. So I started taking care of them. They started growing, and now they're like 4 or 5 feet tall. And I just noticed that two of the three's crowns had divided about 3 years ago, and I didn't realize it because the two stems are so close. What is the best time for me to take that half of tree off of there so they have a single growth point?
The best time to do that is in the early spring.
Okay.
It will heal better than at this time of year and seal over and and so on. Well, actually, I would do it like mid-spring, you know, about the time that you notice the buds starting to break and the new growth starting.
Thank you. I just didn't want those little green and black worms to get in there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The needles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, but that's probably the time to do it. Is that going to make for a kind of a funny looking spruce tree for a little while? Eh?
Yeah, probably. What you may need to do, and you can see how it looks. If there ends up being a bare spot, you might want to kind of tie up or splint the branch that's right lower. Just beyond that, and you may have to cut it back a little bit, which usually we don't recommend doing, but just so that it isn't taller than the one that you've selected to be the leader. I do believe we have a publication on that at the Learning Store that has some nice diagrams.
On pruning spruce.
Yeah, on pruning evergreens.
Yeah, so if you go to the Learning Store, .uwex.edu, or if you just say UW Learning Store, it's going to pop up on your search engine, and then you'll find various categories, and there's one for trees, I think, and trees and shrubs.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
sure. Also, we do have a fact sheet on pruning evergreens that is at Brian Huddleston's Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic site, and if you Google UWEX and then PDDC for Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, there's a great fact sheet there on pruning evergreens.
Yeah, we'll put that up on. I think we may already have it up on our Facebook page. Cheyenne will, I'm sure, put it up if we don't have it there already. We'll take a look and see. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Kel. We have more callers online. By the way, you can join in. Gardening question. Maybe it's the garden. Maybe it's the lawn. The number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You know, I got to tell you, I have an admission to make here. I am tired. I have grown tired of BLTs. I had so many tomatoes this year, and I'm looking, I have these three juicy, ripe, large tomatoes. And I said, okay, one more tonight. And that might be it. That might be it for me for the year.
Well, glad to hear that your tomatoes have been doing well this year. I've been hearing some complaints from people, not so much about tomatoes, but about peppers this year not producing. And I think it's the cool overnight temperatures and just coolness overall. Peppers really like the hot weather, and some folks had difficulty this year.
I had some pretty good luck with these purple peppers.
Oh,
sweet,
nice.
The sweet ones, and then the hot ones, two different hot ones. One that's a bright red and then turns yellow, or no, it starts yellow and then turns bright red, and I can't remember the names of any of them. And another one that looks just like a carrot.
Mm. There is a Bulgarian carrot.
That's the one.
Yeah, it's an heirloom variety, Bulgarian carrot.
Yeah, it was an heirloom in it. They're hot.
Yeah?
They got a little heat to them.
I'm such a wimp with hot peppers.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And Emily, she doesn't like, you know, she's grown anti-heat. So I'm admitting I've frozen up some and all that, but a lot of these are just, I've handed them off to the neighbors and... Oh, well. Deb in Stratford, it's your turn. Hi, Deb. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yes, I was wondering, we have raised beds, and this year we got our tomatoes in a little bit later, and at first they were really good, but now I have that, I think it's called the late blight of the tomatoes. Will we have to take that soil out of the garden beds because that blight is in there now?
What do the tomato plants look like? Are you sure it's late?
Yeah,
blight?
That's my first question.
I looked on the website and I went to the UW thing and looked. They've got like spots on them, but they're like hard yellows. And then I open it, I slice them open, and inside the tomatoes are really dry.
Okay, that's not late blight. Late blight usually forms a fuzzy gray growth on the stems, leaves, and fruits, and the fruits and the whole plant rots and just decays very quickly. If you're having issues with the fruit developing poorly,
That's a different matter.
Yeah, that fortunately, that's not late blight.
Yeah, lucky for you.
Yeah, because that's kind of terminal and rather fast. It could be some kind of calcium problem. Usually when we have calcium disorders, we often have either rotten spots on the fruit or we have hard spots on the fruit. It could also be a virus, I suppose. What are the leaves spotted as well as the fruits?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. You know, and it's not all the tomatoes. Some tomatoes would be really good.
Is it just the bottom half of the tomato?
No.
Okay. So it's not blossom and rot either.
Yeah, no, not that. So I guess my question is, because we have raised beds, how often should we replace that soil? I mean, we amend it with stuff, you know, and right now the
compost.
Spring. Yeah. We have our own compost.
Well, you know,
if you can rotate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. But it's been probably around 12 years that we've used these beds, and we have about 4 of them. So I'm just wondering if that had something to do with it, because otherwise, other years we've had beautiful tomatoes.
Yeah.
You can soil sample those beds. That's what I do.
Okay.
The thing with a lot of the foliar diseases are soil related, the pathogens over winter in soil. But if you've been using clean compost and bagged soil, it's less likely. Also, if you mulch with straw, that usually will help.
Okay. No, we don't mulch with straw.
Yeah, or mulch with newspaper or anything that creates a barrier between the surface of the soil and the tomato plants. Also, pruning off the bottom leaves can help, because a lot of those soil-borne pathogens are spread by splashing water, either rainwater or irrigation water that, when it hits the soil, it splashes up the soil and the spores onto the leaves, and then off you go.
Okay.
So when you remove some of those leaves, that really can help, making sure that it's the whole crown is kind of thinned out, good air circulation, can help with any of those things. Mm-hmm. Usually you don't need to wholesale remove things unless you've had disease issues. Now, if this is the first year that you've had, you might try in that one particular bed to do it, but I just I hesitate to, especially if they're big beds, to tell you to dump it all.
I wouldn't, you know, if 12 years, I would get a
soil test. Yeah, that will give you information on fertility, but unfortunately not disease information.
Yeah.
The other thing is, sometimes that can come in on the plant, you know, and just not be expressed at the time. But if you're not seeing it till the end of the season, I really suspect that it's not going to continue to be an issue for you. Just make sure to continue rotating, do the mulching. And
watch your watering.
Yeah, watch your watering.
Make sure you're getting an inch a week on there. Deb, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking Garden Talk today with Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, we're going to find out how to extend the gardening season with row covers and cold frames, among other things. So looking forward to that. Right now, though, talking your garden in the fall, dividing bulbs, and a whole lot more with Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. And I know lawns have come into play as well today, so feel free. Join in. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. We had a Facebook question from Marilyn who wonders, when's the best time to move ever-bearing strawberries?
I would say the best time to do that is during the spring. Even with the June-bearing strawberries, the best time to do that is in the spring.
All right. And here's David from Delafield. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about a lawn. I'm trying to bring some new life to an existing lawn, and I recently aerated it using a core aerator.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that this would be a good time to put some grass seed down, but I'm just wondering if it's too late in the year.
Well, if you were farther up north, I'd say yes. But seeing as you're in Delafield, usually in the southern part of the state, you can go up until the second week in October. That's
okay.
About the last time that you want to be putting down grass seed. And since it's been so warm, I think that
they probably
will have enough time to get the grass established before we get our first frost. So I would go ahead and do that.
And does that make sense to try and put it down after you've aerated?
Absolutely. That's a
perfect
time to do it. Yeah, it's one of the best times because you've already opened up the ground and there's fresh soil available. So I would say go for it.
And there'd be a little contact.
Yeah, seed to soil contact.
Yep. Thanks, David, for calling. Appreciate it. Back to Facebook for a minute because Nicole sent us a photo, quite a photo here. This is my Lord Baltimore hibiscus. It looks huge. It has about 17 canes on it, and I was wondering, how can I propagate them by division, and when would I do that?
Wow. I have never propagated them before. I've never divided them before. However, thinking about the root system and how the plant grows, I would suggest doing it maybe, they came up so late this year. I would do it, like, I usually don't recommend midsummer, but maybe June, you know, when they've come up and you're sure how big it's going to be.
Right.
I don't know about doing it this time of year. That's not one of the plants that's usually listed as being a good fall propagator.
No.
But I don't think it's a good early spring propagator either. So that's why I'm suggesting late May, early June.
I think that's good advice.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice. And while we're on Facebook, Carrie sent us a photo. So she says, straw bale gardening went well this year and still going. This is a man cave gourd about the size of a rugby ball.
That is a weird-looking critter.
It's really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man. As you're listening, if you haven't been on the Facebook page, go take a look. Go to the left side of our Facebook page. There's something called Posts to the Page, and click there. You'll see this very weird-looking gourd that's growing in the straw bale garden. And that may be why I had so many tomatoes out of my straw bale garden. I mean, that's the only place I had tomatoes was in straw bales. And
I've had a lot of questions on straw bales this year. We were having a discussion among the horticulture educators about what works best in straw bales and what doesn't.
Yeah.
And pretty much the consensus is that peppers don't do very well. Sometimes tomatoes do well, and that gourds, you know, all of the vines, the cucumbers, the melons, and so on, seem to do really well in straw bales. But I
had really good luck with peppers, not the sweet green peppers that people had been
the hot peppers.
I had great results.
That's great.
And potatoes. I just took some seed potatoes and, you know, cut them up, and then I just got dug down in the bales as far as I could and just left them in there, and, you know, a lot of potatoes.
Yeah. People tend to get really mixed results depending on, you know, how they prepared the bale.
And you need to follow the directions.
Yeah, you need to follow the directions pretty carefully.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Bill in Black River Falls has been waiting, so let's go to Bill. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Lisa. I got a question on some spirea bushes. I've got two really mature bushes out there, and they propagate profusely. I dug up 71 really small plants last year. I sold 51 of them. I had about 20 left over, and I wanted to put them in the ground and overwinter them in the ground. And the only place I had to plant them was in the shade, and they're doing fine out there. They're not growing very fast, but
no.
they're really small. And next spring when I pot them up, I want to know if I have to ease them into the sun or if I can just put them out in the sun.
Okay, well, what I would do is, now just for my own information, are these spring flowering ones like bridal wreath spireas or are
they?
No,
they're not bridal wreath. Those are the
one
ones
of the pinks.
White flowers.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
No, they're the gold flame and the,
okay. Okay.
And the dark green ones.
Yeah. Since they're woody plants, have you had them growing in that shady location all season?
Yeah, I put them in. I had my sale in June, and they've been in there ever since. And,
okay.
They look, you know, healthy. They're just not growing as fast as
yeah.
the sun.
I would say if you move them out, you know, if you dig them up before the trees really get well leafed out, that you won't need to do any acclimation. If you wait until after the trees leaf out and they've been producing leaves in shade, then yes, doing some acclimation to get them into the sun would be
so maybe an hour at a time. And
I'd go more.
Yeah. You know, you can usually acclimation is done over several days. So you start them out in partial shade, move them to a little bit lighter shade, and then move them to like a half day of sun.
Oh, okay.
Just like you would with your vegetable plants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you for calling. And Craig in Wautoma, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I got a question on apple trees.
Okay.
I've been trying to start an orchard in Barron County, and I've been having a really poor success rate on it. But I bought some trees last year, and then they died. And I got replacement trees for them this year, and they were bare root trees. And I brought them to Washira County and planted them in pots, and they're doing beautiful. Now the question is, do I take them up to Barron County and put them in the ground this fall, or should I just trench them in Washira County and then wait until spring to plant them?
Okay, so let me see if I've got this right. You took them to Washira County, and they've been in pots all season, or in pots in the ground all season?
They've been in pots all season. They were bare root trees I got this spring for replacement trees.
Gotcha. Okay, so they're in pots right now.
Right.
I would heel them in and plant them next spring.
Okay, that's a good idea. Okay,
yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I cringed a little bit when I, you know, bare root. It's so nice if you can plant bare root
right
and
away.
Not
yeah.
put them in pots.
Yeah.
With all the research now on potted trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, because they've only been in pots for a season, that they won't
that
have had a whole lot of time to develop circling roots and so on.
Some of that research is showing now that if they're just starting to turn,
that it can be
it.
A problem. So, you know, definitely when you do transplant them, you need to make sure that the roots are all pointing out as best as possible.
Let's turn to Keith in River Falls next. Hi, Keith.
Hello. Yes, I have some questions about daffodils.
Sure.
I have a bed that's probably 30 years old and overcrowded, about 6 feet in diameter, and I'd like to move those. But my question is should I abandon that bed, or if I keep it, how should I fertilize it?
Okay, so you want to move the bulbs out and then plant something else there? Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't mind keeping the daffodils in that location. I'm just wondering if the soil is tired of daffodils, or if I'm going to leave
them,
or should I fertilize them, or in what width should I, what should I fertilize them with?
Okay, so definitely do go ahead and divide them. You had a question, too, about whether the bulbs needed to be dried?
Yes. Is there any special treatment, or can I just dig them out of the ground and put them right back in the ground in another location?
Yes, that's absolutely what you can do. And then fill in with soil, you know, where you took out the bulbs. And I would use... Let's see. There are various fertilizers that are listed for bulbs, usually ones that contain a not real high amount of nitrogen, But let's see, you're in River Falls, so you've still probably got pretty good phosphorus in your soil.
Yes.
I would use a traditional bulb fertilizer then. That should provide for the needs. And this is a good time of year to do the bulb fertilizing, especially with a lower nitrogen type of product.
And just one quick question. How much light do daffodils need to have to bloom?
Daffodils will actually take some shade. So I would say at least 6 hours if possible. Even if it is scattered, like they get 2 hours in the morning and then they get a couple hours in the afternoon and then, you know, a couple more in the late afternoon. Or if you plant them under a tree such as a birch or a honey locust that have very small leaves so that they get dappled light all day long for, you know, at least 6 and probably 8 hours. That should do it. They do their best, of course, in full sun, but they can tolerate more shade than tulips, for example.
And they do pretty, you know, you think about when they bloom, mm-hmm. they're blooming when there aren't
right,
a lot of leaves on the trees.
Leaves, so, yeah. Some of them later in the season might be more problematic, but I wouldn't put them under, say, a Norway maple that has huge leaves and you can't even grow grass under that that tree, but they can take a little shade.
All right. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for calling. I'm going to go back to Facebook for a minute because there's Kathy sent us a really beautiful a photo of a really beautiful flower and wonders what it is. It's a bright yellow leaves that are kind of heart-shaped, three leaves, and then in the center looks like a red, rusty red center. Any idea?
It's really pretty. Yeah, it is gorgeous. It's in Minocqua. Good heavens. I'm thinking it's probably one of the non-hardy summer blooming bulbs and that it's just blooming in Minocqua now because it's far up north and that usually it would be blooming down south here. But I really don't know what that is. That is very cool.
Let's invite our listeners. If you can go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, that's the title of the page. Go over on the left side to post to the page and click on that. And you'll see this flower, which is worth seeing anyway.
And, yeah, it's gorgeous.
And then take a guess at what you think it might be, or if you know, that'd be wonderful. So we'll do that. And Carla Hansen sent us several photos. She doesn't really have a question, I don't think, just some comments on what her plants look like. Looks like she's got some onions there.
They look ready to harvest.
They look definitely look ready to harvest. They're flat out.
Yep.
They're ready to harvest. So that's kind of cool to see as well. And we have another question from, or a question, I should say, from Richard in Madison. So let's go to him. Hi, Richard.
Oh, hi. I have about 10 potted geraniums on my balcony. It's southwest facing. It gets lots of light. And I want to move them in when the weather gets cold and put them in front of windows facing the same direction, big windows, lots of light. And I want to know what to do to keep them blooming during the winter. Last year I tried it with, I only had a couple of them, and they didn't really do that well. They mm-hmm. only bloomed occasionally, and I wonder, is there something I can do to optimize that?
Well, they will only bloom sporadically during the winter just because we get a lot less light, even with good exposure, the day length is shorter. So unless you wanted to supplement with a some kind of grow light, you probably won't, you know, get the same amount of blooms that you would get during the growing season. But that being said, Southwest is really good for growing geraniums indoors. And what I would do is I would cut them back a little bit, take off the flower buds for the moment, and usually they are not going to bloom a whole lot after October, so November, December, January. Usually around February, March, they're going to start to pick up again. So I would keep them a little bit on the dry side and keep them in that good light. And, you know, if if they need repotting, if they're really pot bound right now, you could, it's best to do that in spring, but if they're really pot bound and you're having trouble keeping up with the watering, you may want to do that.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. And take another call. Dick in Wauwatosa. Hello. Thank you for calling.
I was wondering about taking clippings from a lilac tree. What's the best way of getting a start on a new one? It's such a beautiful tree.
Is this a Japanese tree lilac that only has one stem, or is it a bush?
I guess it's a bush.
Okay. Lilacs are suckering plants, so usually there are suckers coming up from the base that you can cut off the...
Just dig right in, cut them off.
Dig right in and cut them off with a piece of root, and they will usually start quite successfully from that. It's a lot easier than taking cuttings.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot more successful.
Okay, so they have to be a little, 2 foot or...
They don't even have to be that big. They could be 10 inches or so, and they should still go.
Huh.
They're one of the easier ones to propagate along with Japanese spirea. And what you can do also if you don't have any suckers coming up is if there's a branch that's really near the ground, you can pile soil on top of it so that the end sticks out. And it will usually form some adventitious roots along the stem somewhere.
Mm-hmm. It's good if you've got a sharp spade.
Yeah.
A sharp spade
use
really
a
helps.
Metal file.
Nice clean cut.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't have a sharp spade, definitely get a metal file at the hardware store and sharpen it up.
Okay. That's great. I have one more.
And do that, by the way, in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in the spring.
Yep.
Too late now, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it right now.
Okay. What about trimming a burning bush?
Burning bush also should be done in the spring when it's still dormant.
All right.
Lilac, on the other hand, should be done right after it flowers. That's when you should pull in lilac.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Dave. And... we have some open lines. We'll get you on at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller with Lisa Johnson for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Lisa Johnson. Lisa, UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. Always fun to have her along, and certainly I'm glad that you are listening in as well. And if you have a question, join in. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or post a photo and or question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. Or you can also email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And I am going to go to Marty in Palmyra next. Marty, hi. Thank you for calling.
Larry, Lisa, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Supposedly, I am the proud owner of about 125-year-old bur oak tree, and I want to take care of this thing. And I believe a month or so ago, I had gypsy moths, climbing up the sides of this tree. And as I look at it, it's like a lot of smaller secondary branches are void of any leaves. My fingers are itching to go get a saw to cut these things off, but something in the back of my mind says, no. I thought I read somewhere it might come back this spring. Leave it alone. And then on top of that, I got some of this special sauce from one of the big box stores to help kill these things. And my buddy who owns a nursery said, why do you want to put that in the fall? It's going to go to the roots. You want it to go up to the branches, so wait until the spring to apply this product. Any input?
Okay, you got a lot of data going on here. So first of all, gypsy moths, did you see the female laying eggs on your tree, the white female?
No, it was like a blackish, hairy-looking thing, and I saw them. I killed them.
Okay, you're talking about caterpillars?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
They were on the side of my house and also climbing up my bur oak.
Okay. All right, so probably the defoliation then that you saw would have been a result of the caterpillar feeding and not necessarily that the branch is dead.
Okay.
But you say this was a month ago.
At the most, a month ago, I was squashing caterpillars.
Okay. Mm. I'm trying to remember where Palmyra is in the state.
So we're in southern...
Southern in the Kettle Moraine State
Kettle Moraine area.
Okay.
Half hour north of Lake Geneva.
Did you see... because that's usually the adults are out by July.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it isn't gypsy moth. It
could be Japanese beetles?
No.
If it's a caterpillar, no. It could be forest tent caterpillar.
That's a possibility.
Did they spin webs or anything?
No. It was a fairly good-sized caterpillar, inch and a half long.
Hmm. Yeah. You didn't take a photo of any, did you?
No.
I
know I've got the Japanese beetles because they're having their way with my raspberry plants, but I didn't know if that transcends to a tree.
No.
They're not going to create problems. Japanese beetles won't create a problem for
not for oaks.
For your oak.
Okay.
Lindens and birches, yes, but not oak. So I'm still trying to figure out, I mean, having caterpillars crawling on your house is, yes, something that gypsy moth caterpillars can do. But the timing is just really bizarre for it to be gypsy moth. Do you think you got them all, or have you seen any egg masses on your tree?
I doubt that. I've got whatever I could see.
Okay.
But they're very, very well camouflaged with the burr oak bark, and I'm sure the damage was done already. You know, the leaves. My neighbor has an oak tree next door, and its dying, half dying leaves are floating into my yard. And I thought, oh my god, my tree's dying. But as I looked up at my tree, my leaves aren't browning or dying or falling off. It's my neighbor's.
Okay.
It's just that the branches, the second smaller branches, look void of leaves.
Okay.
Sparse. You know, that's sparse.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now that you've told me that your neighbor's tree is dying, now I'm worried about oak wilt. however, being a burr oak, you've got a better chance. You know, I would advise getting an arborist out there to make sure that you don't have gypsy moth eggs on it. If you do have gypsy moth eggs on it, they can be oiled with... there's a product called sunspray, horticultural oil, but there are some other oil products too. And typically they will treat the trees in December or January to make sure that you don't get gypsy moths hatching in the spring. Now, if you wanted to use... whatever, I don't know for sure what the product was that you got from the nursery. That should be applied in late fall if it's a big tree to make sure that it is taken up for the spring by the time the gypsy moths hatch. But in case this wasn't gypsy moth, I hate to have you use it.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm thinking you should get an arborist out there to just verify that that's what's going on with it and maybe to take a look over at the neighbor's tree and say,
yeah, is that a red oak or is it a,
yeah.
You know, if it's a red oak.
Yeah, then they usually do not survive oak wilt for very long. And since you're telling me that it's dropping brown leaves, this is a little early in the season for that to be happening. So I would be concerned about oak wilt, and that can be transmitted by underground root grafts. So if your tree is close to your neighbor's tree, that would be something to check out as well.
And be worried about a little bit.
Yeah.
Good luck, Marty. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Andy in Oshkosh has a question. Oh, he has some photos up on Facebook as well. Andy, hi. Andy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
Okay. What have you got for us today?
Okay. I have three or four rhubarb plants, and twice a week I go pick off two or three plants that have the bottom leaves have turned yellow, and they're on their way to dying. If I leave them, they just get soft and mushy, you know, and they're totally yellow and dry up.
Yeah.
If I pick them soon enough, I'm thinking I can still eat them and make a pie out of them. So my questions are, what's making a couple of leaves on each plant twice a week die? And second question is, could it be that I'm watering them too much? I water at least every other day.
Oh, that's a lot of water.
Oh, that is a lot of water.
That is a lot of water.
Yeah, that is a lot of water. Usually once a week, unless you're in really sandy soil.
Which it doesn't look like.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, see, there's a lot of tomatoes next to them in pails, and they need water every day. So.
Oh, yeah, but that's because...
As long as I'm watering the tomatoes, I...
The rhubarb is planted in the ground, right?
Yeah.
The tomatoes being in a bucket have limited root space, and yeah, they would need water, especially this time of year, fairly often. But plant in the ground like that, yeah, I definitely would not water it that much.
How often should I water it?
You should give it once about an inch of water about once a week.
Okay. All right, so that could be my problem.
That could be your issue, yeah. The other thing is, if this didn't happen until recently, it could just be natural senescence at this time of year.
Mm-hmm. That's been going on all summer.
Oh, it's been going on all summer. Yeah. Well, then I would be a little concerned about possible root rot. And next year, don't water them so much. That would be a good place to start.
Is there any problem with eating them?
Well, usually this time of year they're pretty tough and not so
bitter.
Good. Yeah, very bitter. So usually you want to harvest those in the spring up until maybe June.
Really? I've been making a pie every week, July and August.
Oh, well, if it hasn't been, where are you located again?
Oshkosh.
Oshkosh. Well, that is a little farther up in the state, but... usually they start to get pretty tough and bitter at this time of year.
Yeah. But if it's not going to poison you or anything. So.
Yeah, as long as it hasn't been frozen. We do worry about when we start getting frost that some of the, I'm trying to remember what it is, the oxalic acid that is in the leaves can migrate into the petioles, the leaf stems.
Then you definitely don't
want to eat them.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Andy, for calling. Appreciate it. Renee in Chippewa Falls, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions. One, I planted cherry tomatoes and grape tomatoes, and the cherry tomatoes all split before I could even pick them, even some of the green ones, but the grape tomatoes didn't. And my second question is, we had three apple trees get that black rot died, and we took them out. So should we wait to replant them in the same spot, or should we not plant new trees in the same spot?
Okay, let's start with the cherry tomatoes. First of all, were they all the same cultivar?
Yes.
Okay. It's probably just a varietal difference then. There are some that are much more prone to splitting, especially heirloom varieties. It could also have been exacerbated by weather conditions. Sometimes that will help to cause splitting. Usually cherry tomatoes aren't as... susceptible to that as the larger heirloom tomatoes, but I know there are some of the varieties that are definitely susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
That's probably why the cherry tomatoes split. I would get a different variety next year.
Okay.
And the apple trees, so the old apple trees got a root rot or what?
They were, you could see on the trunk where they were... had been trimmed before we got them, and they turned black, and then they died right from that particular spot.
Okay.
And then it went to the next tree and the next tree, and we have seven grandchildren, and we planted one for each grandchildren, and we're down to, we lost three, and one is starting to go now. I can see the black coming on the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just slowly dies off, and then it... You know, it takes a year or two, and then they're gone, and we took them out, and we're wondering if that's...
Boy,
I'd plant it in a different spot.
I would, too, and I would I would probably send in at least a photo to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic and have them take a look at
there.
It.
I mean, that, if the trees are still
starting,
there.
And it's fairly young, and then we have two other ones that are perfectly fine. And then we have a cherry tree that is perfectly fine.
You want to find out what that is.
Yeah.
They're all different trees. They're all different.
I'd get at least get a photo, and Brian Huddleston would probably prefer a diseased branch that was partially diseased but
partially
okay.
Healthy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And send that in to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, which you can find online, the address and everything. Don't send it. Send it on a Monday.
Yeah, don't send it on Friday.
Don't send it on Friday.
I've heard that before, yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely have Brian take a look at that. I would also be very careful when you're pruning your fruit trees to make sure that you disinfect your shears in between.
Every cut.
Yeah, every cut. If you've had problems like that before, you might be spreading stuff around on your shears or your saw.
Okay.
So use rubbing alcohol as a good disinfectant.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim from Caledonia wonders if it's too late for weed control at this time of the year, but I'm not sure if it's weed control if he means in his lawn or if he means in the garden. So if
you're talking about a pre-emergent, I guess I wouldn't bother using a pre-emergent at this time of year. If you are trying to get rid of perennials, like thistles, you can still spray something at this time of year. If it's annuals, it probably isn't even worth it at this point.
Not at this time of the year.
Yeah.
Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa has been with us many, many, many times over the years. She's a horticulture educator, and she used to work in Milwaukee County. Now she works in Dane County. Great to have her with us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us again for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with our guest today, Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for UW Extension in Dane County. Great to have her along. And before we go back to talking about the garden, I want to mention again that U.S. House Speaker John Boehner is holding a news conference about his resignation. Should be on right now, as a matter of fact. And if you want to listen to that, you can hear it live online at WPR.org. So please feel free to go online to hear John Boehner. If you have a gardening question, though, call us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Dawn in Chippewa Falls has a question for you, Lisa, so let's go there. Dawn, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I live in very sandy soil. And when I bought this house 8 years ago, there were two mature apple trees that produced large fall apples. Mm-hmm. And there was a cherry tree. The cherry tree had some issues, like it was a disease or something, and so it died in a couple of years. One of the apple trees, I have a lot of deer who come through, and they barked the branches.
Oh.
And the most beautiful apple tree, it's like, I don't know if after they barked it, then a fungus moved in, because I cut off all the branches that were diseased. I've only got one branch left. And they had like a white fungus on it.
Mm.
And the one next to it looks like it's starting to lose its branches too, but the branches way up high. The deer just totally stripped every bit of bark off them. They were, you know.
If all the bark's gone.
Yeah, is the bark gone on the trunk or just the branches?
There is some on the trunk, and there's one branch I didn't cut off because it had some life in it still. And so I left it, and it has been partially barked, but not totally barked.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've had a deer herd move in, and I haven't seen them this year. And there is life and there is bark on the one remaining. It's like it had like two trunks, sort of.
Uh-huh.
And this branch is coming up from the trunk. And the first, actually, its bark is pretty intact. and I don't see. But the, on the bottom, there's some white.
But the trunk is
intact. Did you say?
Yes.
Okay.
So you've got one trunk that's intact, and you've got a branch.
Right. Well, it goes up to about 4 feet off the ground. It had three big branches that went out.
Uh huh.
And two of them were totally gone. So I just
cut them off.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
And the other one, there is, now that I'm looking at it, there is some damage to the bark.
Okay. All right.
Okay. not good.
Yeah, not a real pretty story there, sounds like. Whether you're actually going to get enough regrowth from the damaged areas to, you know, warrant actually keeping the tree around with one branch, I'm not sure. But obviously you're going to need to do some protection of the trees. Now, you said that there appears to be some white fungus.
It doesn't just appear. On the branches that I cut off, it looks like fungus to me. It's beige-ish white, hairy stuff.
Okay, is it soft? I mean, I'm wondering if it's possibly scale.
Well, I cut it off a couple weeks ago, and it feels hard.
Okay.
Well,
I think that probably you should send a photo or a sample to Brian Huddleston then.
At the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Yeah, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. It's not sounding like anything that is familiar to me.
Yeah, you may need to get some help from him. The Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, it's PDDC is the sort of the short for it. But if you go online and type in UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, it's going to pop up. And I'd get a photo or two, more than one. I'd take a few and send them in and see what he's got to say. Because it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, to be really honest, you know, when you have the vascular system compromised because of the deer damage and then you have something else moving in that
doesn't
bode well.
Good luck.
If you do plant new apple trees in the future, you may want to make sure they're fenced if deer are going to continue to be
an issue. Almost would have to fence them if they're that
bad.
Yep. Nancy, sorry. Nancy in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, hi, and thank you. I bought at the end of the growing season a mandevilla. It's called a giant white, and it was about, a foot or so in this pot. And it is absolutely spectacular.
They are beautiful plants.
It's stunning, and I have it on a kind of a pyramid, a metal pyramid about 4 feet or so high, and it's way over that, grown all around it and over the top. And what I'd like to do is winter it, if I can, in my sunroom. But may I cut all that back? And then start over in spring in a different pot, in a bigger pot with a bigger trellis?
Okay, yes, you can overwinter mandevillas inside, particularly if you have good light. I would try not to cut back a whole lot of it if you can help it. The reason that I say that is that when you cut something back severely, you tend to encourage a whole lot of new growth, and going right into the winter, I hate to do that. But if the trellis is in the ground and the only way that you can get the thing off is to cut it back.
It's not. It's in a pot. And
it
I
is
thought
in a pot.
I'd bring
okay.
the whole thing in because I have the sunroom I could do it in. But I don't want it to start growing up my wall.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. I would say you can,
I wouldn't
you
worry
can
about
trim
that.
It. Yeah, it's probably not going to be that big an issue. Most likely you will see some leaves dropping.
It's not going to be happy right away.
Yeah, it's definitely going to take a while to acclimate to your site. Mm-hmm. So you may see some of the vine dying back anyway that you can cut. And mm-hmm. that's another reason that I didn't want to advocate, you know, really hacking and slashing it.
Uh-huh. Well, I won't hack and slash. Should I feed it?
No, we usually don't recommend that either this time of year. Usually October through at least February, you don't want to do a lot of fertilization. So I would trim it back a little bit bring it in.
Maybe at the top.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's starting to go crazy. It's on steroids.
Yeah. And bring it in, keep it, you know, watered during the winter, and again, do expect some leaf drop and die back, and then acclimate it when you take it out again in the spring. And yes, you can definitely cut it back more and repot it at that time and give it a dose of fertilizer then.
Good. Could I do the same thing with a hibiscus that I bought at the same time? The hibiscus isn't quite as healthy, but I mean, it's got lots and lots and lots of buds.
Yeah, it'll probably drop those as soon as it gets inside, I regret to say.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of messy.
Yeah.
But anyway, I love
and
that, too.
And do make sure that you spray both of those off with insecticidal soap, particularly underneath the leaves.
Before I bring it in. Huh?
Yeah, I often end up transporting aphids and white flies inside, so you don't want to do that.
And with insecticidal soap. And I can
or neem oil.
And I can just spray. I can buy that in a bottle.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't have to make my own.
Nope.
Okay, I think.
Not unless you want to. Thanks, thanks a lot for calling, Nancy. Tom in River Falls. Hi, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. I have a 5-year-old sodded lawn, and I have what people call fairy rings. They're circles, and the grass is dead in the middle and in the circle, and it was bad. It was a little bit last year, and now it's really bad. It's all over the lawn, and I'm wondering what can I do to try to get rid of that.
Okay, well, there are a lot of different fungal spots that infect lawns. So what I would do is I would send some photos to the UW Turf Lab, and if they request a sample, you might also want to send them a sample. There are typically what I've heard of as fairy rings usually are a ring of mushrooms, and that's often caused by dying roots. But this sounds more like a leaf of foliar issue. And there are so many of them, depending on the size of the spots and the color of the spots and the time of year and so on. There are a whole lot of fungi that it could be. So I would definitely get in touch with the Turf Lab. If you just Google UW Turf Lab, their phone number should come up.
I wonder if University of Wisconsin River Falls would have one of those, because I live right in River Falls.
They do have a really strong horticulture program there, so they may. I just know that the State Turf Lab here in is in Verona, in down in Dane County.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call as well. We have Sue and Bloomer with a question. Hi, Sue.
Hi. My question is, I got a poinsettia last year for Christmas. It did very well in our house, so I threw it in the ground this spring to see if it would last.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the foliage has done great. Obviously, no flowers in this time of year, but the foliage is wonderful. So I'd like to try to bring it back in and see if I can have poinsettias at Christmas. So what do I do?
Okay. Well, first of all, you're going to need to, I assume you planted it right in the ground?
Yep.
Okay. You're going to need to dig it up and put it in a pot, and that should happen fairly soon, especially if you're in Bloomer, because you're way up north there, right?
Mm-hmm. At Chippewa Falls area.
Yeah. So before it gets too much colder. And there is a protocol for putting the, it's kind of a pain. You have to start putting the plant in a closet around 5 o'clock every day.
Okay.
So that it gets longer nights and shorter days. And okay. That's what stimulates it to flower.
Okay.
And you have to be very careful about it because
yeah.
if somebody
opens the closet,
even
turns
for
on
a
the
second,
light, yeah, it can really mess things up.
So it's got to be like pitch black.
Yeah, okay. Right, yeah. So like if light shines in through the crack in the door or underneath the door, that can mess things up.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's...
it is a real chore.
I won't I won't make any... promises about how easy it is because it really isn't.
Do I start doing that immediately upon bringing it in? Do I start that like in November or?
No, it should be started pretty soon. Right around I think the 15th of October.
Okay.
Beginning of October.
Okay, and then if I hang in there.
Yeah, if you
start to see buds or flowers, that will kind of be my signal that
you can
come out of the dark. Or,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But during the day, it needs to be in the light.
Yep.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, and as much light as you can.
And give it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a very lots of light in our house, so that's not a problem. So the finding the dark is going to be the challenge. So.
Good luck with that.
Don't let anybody open up that closet door.
Thank you much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh yeah, that is a challenge. That one is.
Yeah.
And here's Karen with a question about stink bugs, I think. Hi, Karen.
Yes, this is Karen in Jefferson, and I'm concerned about stink bugs. I was wondering what the status of those were. I have some apple trees, and I had heard that you can't tell from the outside of the apple if you've got stink bugs in there, and that's very scary to me.
No, that's not the case.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, the stink bug, it's mostly the adult that's going to be causing the problems. And, you know, we do have native stink bugs. It's the brown marmorated stink bug that is the invasive species that we're worried about. I have not heard of any reports of it being in Jefferson County. I've heard of Racine and I've heard of Dane.
We're right next to Dane.
Yeah,
that's
you are.
I'm really concerned that, you know, within a year or two it could be over here. And even the other aspects of the stink bug, too, don't sound pretty.
Yeah, the overwintering in your house, that, I admit, scares mm-hmm. me as well. We do have a fact sheet on the stink bug, and I'm trying to remember whether that's on Brian's site or not.
It's probably in the Learning Star, though, wouldn't it be?
It might be. What you might want to do is check with PJ Leash from the Insect Diagnostic Lab and see where that is.
Yeah, actually, if you go to the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, you're going to find it.
Yeah, it should be on there. And but again, it's being pretty slow ramping up here in Dane County. I've had it at my house, and I know of some other people that have had it. But you know, I've found one or two insects about this time of year as I'm cleaning up in the garden. I have not seen them earlier. I've not had any damage on fruits. You know, what we're hoping is that this will not become the horrible problem that it is in Pennsylvania and some of the other southeastern states.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. It is a good thing to keep watch for. Do check out the fact sheet so that you know what it looks like. But again, we do have native stink bugs too, so you don't want to get too freaked out over a native one.
And I think Phil Pelletieri is coming back next week. So
he'll
be on the show
on
maybe Wednesday. Cheyenne says, yeah, Wednesday.
So, all right. I hope he talks about it, too.
Yeah, well, I'll try to remember to bring it up, and if I don't, you call back. Call back. What the heck? It's a week away. And thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And let's see. Carol in Oak Creek up next. Carol, hi.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Love your show.
Thank you.
All my life, I planted hundreds of annual flowers, and this year I got some perennials, and they're doing just marvelous. what do I do? How do I treat them so they don't die for me in wintertime?
Okay, you've got some perennials? What kind of perennials?
I got, I think, 3 Shasta daisies, and the other ones I can't remember, although the little thing that tells you what flower is, I have it planted right in front, but I offhand, I don't know.
Okay, and you've got them planted in the ground, right?
Yes, and they're kind of next, maybe 3 feet from a brick building. So it's warm there for sure.
Okay. Well, not knowing exactly what you have, I'm just going to give you some generic directions.
Yeah.
For most things, like the Shasta daisies, you want to wait until the first frost, the first hard frost. And you can, you know, once they've died back, you can cut them back. If they are species that are marginally hardy, and you might want to check on the tag to make sure that you're in the right zone, that, you know, they're hardy for your area. But you can use a little bit of shredded bark mulch to keep them, you know, sheltered for this winter, just around the base, not burying the plant or anything like that, but just to kind of give them a little bit more winter protection.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go back to Facebook for a minute. Nina sent us a photo. She's I see this Yacon. I wonder if it's the Yukon. Yacon tuber? I wonder if it's Yukon. That she's got a photo of it, and she can't wait to harvest them. And then we've got...
That's a big cabbage.
Daniel says, sometimes it pays to plant late. I've recorded just over 10 inches of rain in September in Barron. Well, that's pretty cool. And Amy planted several rose shrubs in her yard in Monona, and they've done very well this summer. Getting rose bushes ready for winter, anything to do?
Sure. Well, if they've got a lot of black spot on them, I usually recommend pulling off the leaves as, you know, fall progresses, and making sure that you remove any of those diseased leaves. I don't like to cut back roses too far in the winter because you never know how far they're going to die back naturally. And mound some soil or... preferably some bark mulch around the base to, if they're grafted roses, to protect the base. If they are roses such as the knockout types of roses that are on their own roots, you don't have to do that mounding because there's no graft to protect. So,
would you bring in begonia? Somebody was wondering.
Yes. Yes. Begonia should come in before it gets below 45.
And here's a hibiscus that someone wanted us to identify. It's a beautiful hibiscus from Gale.
Wow.
6 inches across.
Could be zone 4. Cranberry Crush, could be Plum Fantasy.
Looks
from
like
the
Cranberry
looks of it.
Crush.
Yeah. That we have that one in the teaching garden, and it is gorgeous.
Oh, they are beautiful. And that
traffic
is
stoppers.
A beautiful flower, for sure. And let's see. Is it time to move my lily bulbs? So I bet you daylily bulbs, Tony and Sean. It's getting fine, a little late, but
yeah. You can either Oriental or Asiatic lilies. That's absolutely fine to move them. Daylilies, like Larry said, it's getting a little bit later in the year. Those are not true bulbs, but you can still be. We've had warm weather, so you can still be dividing perennials.
Lisa, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to her next visit. Lisa Johnson, horticulture educator for the University of Wisconsin Extension in Dane County, and I can promise you we will have her back. On Monday, we're going to learn to use how using dyes and fabrics can turn sunlight into electricity. You ever think about that? That's pretty cool. At 11:45, we'll get an update on the fall forecast from our UW weather guys. So that'll be fun as well. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.